Good morning. I'd like to thank you all for coming to hear about Massachusetts' effort to promote early childhood mental health through enhanced pediatric medical homes and the use of Medicaid data to evaluate the effect of this integration effort. I want to introduce my co-presenter, Dr. Deborah Allen. She's the Director of Child, Adolescent, and Family Health at the Boston Public Health Commission, and she was instrumental in the design of the My Child intervention, as well as in the implementation. She's going to describe the approach that Massachusetts took to designing and implementing the program. I'm Donna Mosh from Apt Associates. I'm a senior fellow there, and I will present the evaluation findings. Together, Debbie and I are going to discuss the outcomes of interest as well as the methodological challenges and sustainability strategies. Debbie?
Good morning, everyone. So My Child, it stands for, it's one of those acronyms you make up while you're in the shower. It's Massachusetts Young Children's Health Initiative for Learning and Development, but I don't think anybody has ever used the full name except at conferences to explain it. It's known throughout the program as My Child. It's an innovative approach to addressing early childhood mental health and our slides don't go into this, but because we have a little extra time, because we're down one presenter, I'll tell you a little about how we landed on an integrated model, which isn't actually where we started. The grant is a SAMHSA system of care grant. Most of those grants around the country, those are grants to provide system of care development and services to children with mental health needs. And because of where the pressure in the system is greatest, most of those grants serve older children than we did. Our program specifically served children from zero through the end of first grade, with that interesting endpoint being intended for the program to be able to assist families as they entered into school and developed IEPs for children with mental health needs. And the grant arose in the context, we applied for the grant in 2009, 3 years after the resolution of a class action suit in Massachusetts that resulted in enhancement to the child mental health system within Medicaid. It was called the Rosie D. case, brought against the state for failure to have an adequate continuum of mental health care. And looking at that system 3 years later, what the state realized, and the state was the applicant for this grant, although I work for the city, what the state realized was that although the grant mandated screening in pediatrics for a provider to get reimbursed for a well child visit for mental health and developmental issues, and screening was indeed beginning to go on pretty universally, there was the system of care that was developed with the resolution of the case was not serving young kids. So the grant was intended very explicitly to fill that gap, recognizing that the failure to serve young kids could only increase pressure on the system later on, that there were probably opportunities for prevention, and certainly for prevention of the sort of frequent crises that arise in the care of older children and teenagers with mental health needs. So our intent was to serve very young families. And the original discussion, the state was required in applying for this grant to have a local partner, and to our great gratification chose Boston as their partner, so I became involved in the discussion. And in the beginning, the plan was to figure out how to tailor the existing system that was serving older children to meet the needs of young children better. And as we discussed it, we came to the conclusion that that was not a terrific idea, that if we were really trying to catch kids who were being screened in primary care and identified really, you know, in infancy and toddlerhood, with mental health needs, that it would, these were not children whose parents were used to the idea that there was a problem that needs solving. These were not people who were knocking on the door of the mental health system. In fact, for most of them, the idea of infant mental health was completely incomprehensible. It was not something, you know, it's not something you pick up what to expect when you're expecting and read about. And so it was we had to figure out a way to reach families who were going to be identified very early, whose kids might end up having quite significant needs, but for whom in many cases the provider was going to be introducing that topic newly. Hence the idea of integration into the pediatric medical home. And we've been very gratified to see that that really is an effective strategy for bringing this concept to families. The program was designed initially in this grant writing process, and then it was, as it was implemented, as a partnership between the state and the city. And I'll show you more about this. That partnership has really been tremendously important to its effectiveness and to, we hope, its sustainability, given the state's importance as the place where Medicaid gets operated. My child, as I said, intervenes early, serving very young kids. And it, as it was placed in the medical home, one other advantage of that placement is it adopted a lot of the culture of the medical home that's been developed by the Academy of Pediatrics, largely in relation to kids with other kinds of special needs. So the mantra of the pediatric medical home being family-centered, community-based, coordinated, compassionate, was really part of the DNA, if you will, of this project, built into it the idea of placing it in this location. This very complicated slide shows you the structure of this partnership. So at the top is this partnership of the state and the city. And you'll notice that it says on one side launch sites and on the other side my child sites. I'm not going to talk about Project Launch. Some of you may know that as a SAMHSA name for another kind of grant that serves young kids, 0 to 8. In the case of Launch, it's intended not to serve kids who would otherwise be in the mental health system, but to be primary and preventive care around mental health. And 6 months after we wrote the My Child grant, before we knew we'd gotten it, the state decided it would also go after a launch grant, and because they had developed this working relationship with us at the city, they invited us once again to be their partners. And then 3 months later, we learned we'd gotten both grants. So we had a conversation with SAMHSA about the idea of having, while they were quite discreet in the eligibility criteria, launch, primary, and preventive, my child focused on kids who looked to be at imminent risk of having long-term serious mental health needs. We talked with SAMHSA about the idea of having an integrated management team between the two. So two state agencies and the city health department became the core of the management team for the two grants. And that gave us the opportunity to bring together not just the four sites that were part of My Child, which are three community health centers and Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, with us to think about these issues, but also to include three additional sites that were serving launch kids, which was two more health centers and the clinic, the pediatric clinic at Boston Medical Center. So the whole program of early childhood mental health partnership was the city, the state, five community health centers, healthcare for the homeless, and a hospital clinic. And we had various structures within that configuration of partners that helped us manage. One was a collaborative leadership team, which brought all the sites together. One was a parent council that we developed, which became a really wonderful opportunity to give parents a sense of agency as they were brought into the program, given this rather tough news that their child might have mental health needs, but then also given the opportunity to feel active in designing the system that was going to do something about that and serve their child. And all of those partners came together in a learning collaborative that lasted through the life of the two grants, working at various issues along the way, like how do you effectively do recruitment? Questions like how do you script the way pediatricians give that news? How do we address the fact that in the first couple of years it was easier to recruit parents who had 3 and 4 year olds than parents of newborns, all became the kinds of things that the Learning Collaborative worked on. The model of care, and this was true for both of the programs, Launch and My Child, So we're going to only talk about the evaluation of my child, but we actually have parallel findings for launch, and if there's time in the discussion, glad to tell you about those. The team that participated in the learning collaborative for each site had to be a primary care champion, that was not someone we were paying. So that required a kind of in-kind contribution of a provider's non-reimbursed time for participation in the learning collaborative. Two people that we were paying for, and I'll say more about them, a family partner and an early childhood mental health clinician, and an administrator who was someone who was going to have capacity to affect change around very much the kinds of things the last presenter talked about, like how is space handled at the site, how are appointments made to make it easy for warm handoffs from pediatrician to the My Child team. The specifics of the My Child team were these two individuals who were initially paid for entirely by the grant. As time went on, we were able to get more and more reimbursement for the work of the early childhood mental health clinician, although things like time on the learning collaborative obviously were not reimbursable. A major issue in replicability, and something we're working on at a policy level, continues to be payment for the family partner, who is essentially a community health worker. The way we originally conceived the grant, the family partner was going to do essentially social case management, because it was very clear that issues like being homeless or at risk of homelessness, after all, one of our sites was healthcare for the homeless, were major stressors for families, and that it was going to be hard to talk about sort of the rarefied details of child development when a family was worried about where the next meal was coming from. So we originally conceived the early childhood mental health clinician as the person who was going to be involved in all the issues around mental health and parenting, and the family partner is the one who was going to be supportive, but largely with a focus on social issues. As time went on, the team got much more integrated in its practice, and we realized that very often the family partner had to be a person with lived experience raising a child who had needed services of the systems that we were dealing with. So it was either a child with mental health needs or behavioral health needs, they ended up being a spectacular group of people who had both lived experience and, as they went through the learning collaborative and various kinds of training we provided around any mental health opportunity that didn't require licensure. So they were trained on wraparound, they were trained on CEFL. They became just really important to the clinical process, because very often they were able to say to parents, really, you know, no, this is not a death sentence for your child. This is something I've been through. This is something that's manageable, and better to manage it now than to wait until things crop up when the child goes to school. And they became really sources of information about the family, not only for the mental health clinician, but for the whole practice. And we began to have discussions with clinicians at the practices, providers, pediatricians, who would say, well, I asked Candace, one of the family partners, and she said I really needed to see this child, so I did, which was not the kind of conversation we expected to see happening when we planned the grant. We went into the grant with a very clear sense that we were interested in sustainability, because we were, after all, trying to sort of figure out how to get early childhood mental health addressed in a system that was statewide and mandatory. So the evaluation was very, very important to the team that was doing implementation. And we had a number of evaluation questions, some of which we're going to address in more detail than others just because of time. The first was obviously, does this process improve outcomes for children, in terms of their mental health status? And given that we are working with children as young as newborns, also does it improve mental health for parents, because so much of what's going on in infant and toddler mental health care is dyadic care. So question number one. Number two, are parents happy with it? Because if they're not, they're not going to stick around. Number three, and we're not going to address the gap we're trying to fill. Number three, do providers like it? Because if it doesn't make it easier to serve as a pediatric medical home, it's not going to have any traction. Number four, is it able to serve the diverse population of kids seen in Boston healthcare centers, at Boston Medical Center, at Healthcare for the Homeless? And then finally, in terms of sustainability, but central to this presentation, does it make any difference in terms of cost and utilization for MassHealth, the Medicaid program in Massachusetts, which is going to be where most of these services are paid for? So is there a return on investment we can show to build the case for sustainability? And I want to say, Donna's going to go into the specifics of evaluation, but we were particularly interested in, for, I don't know if many of you work in pediatrics, but a permanent lament in pediatrics is that you can do terrific things that are going to pay off in 50 years, and it's really hard to prove cost effectiveness because babies with mental health problems are generally not hospitalized. So it's hard to prove cost savings because there isn't a lot of investment that goes on. One of the questions we were interested in was, if you provide mental health services to the family early, can you avert costs for other things that may be stress related? So one of our questions going into this, in particular in relation to Medicaid, was, are we saving costs for two things that are relatively costly in childhood, asthma and injury, both of which are A, known to be related to family stress in their incidence, and B, relatively costly items in childhood. So one of our hypotheses was that the grant might, the implementation might save money, not by affecting mental health costs, but by affecting these other two kinds of conditions in childhood. And now I'll turn it over to Donna to talk about the evaluation.
Thank you, Debbie. Let me take 1 minute to talk about the role of the evaluators in this. I was actually, as the chief scientific officer for the evaluation, able to participate in the development of a grant that was submitted to SAMHSA to begin with. So I worked hand in glove with the folks in the state and the city to design the local evaluation. The terms of the national evaluation were set by SAMHSA, and so some of the findings that we're going to recap here come from data in the national evaluation and others from the local evaluation. The Medicaid analysis, or MassHealth in the case of Massachusetts, that is all part of the local evaluation. The other thing to say is that as evaluators, we were part of the learning community and working closely with sites around implementation. I don't know how many people are familiar with the Child System of Care national evaluations that SAMHSA does, but they are quite onerous. There are many measures to be administered, and they impose a heavy burden on participants. And so working closely with families, working closely with the sites, and working closely with the administration and the Boston Public Health Commission, we were able to do what we could to mitigate that burden and also engage people in ways that would make them feel that the investment in this was worthwhile. So the SAMHSA evaluation data were collected at baseline and at 2 6-month intervals. The tools that were used were prescribed by the national evaluation. So the child behaviors checklist and the parental stress index, those were both, the parenting stress index were both part of the national evaluation. And then there were both qualitative and quantitative methods used in the local evaluation, including interviews with the pediatric providers, as Debbie described earlier, and focus groups with parents, and then our study of utilization and cost data. We're not going to focus heavily on the qualitative data today in the interests of brevity, and we'll be focusing more on the Medicaid outcomes, but I wanted to note that the qualitative data collection were organized with structured provider interviews and structured and facilitated parent focus groups. And then the MassHealth data were analyzed, as we'll see in a few minutes, for use and cost. This slide about with child attributes, I want to just note that the ages, the vast majority of kids in the program, and by the way, the total number of children who were served in My Child between 2010 and 2015 were 369 children, and 133 of those were enrolled in the Medicaid analysis. Parents had to consent separately for the use of the Medicaid claims files data, and some were worried about aspects of that. There were individuals who were on the MassHealth program who they had a lot of concerns about access to their private health information, and we understood that. So we didn't have full participation in that piece of it. In any event, the majority of children here are in the birth to two-year-old category. The racial and ethnic mix is not radically different across the board from that of the MassHealth population overall. So social and clinical needs of the kids. This was a high-risk, high-need parent and child population, as Debbie described earlier. They were identified for their risk. And families here were exhibiting significant health risk factors, or what we know as social determinants of health. So high rates of maternal depression in the population and other maternal mental illnesses. There were also a significant percentage of people who had substance use conditions. There was a high rate of housing instability in the population. Low income in the population was a given, in that 92% of our participants were qualified for MassHealth, and the rate of child behavioral or challenging behavioral conditions and disorders was also high in the population. I would say that this is very consistent with national data, and that there is a strong correlation between family poverty and childhood disability, and the SSI program, for example, is designed to try to mitigate some of the risks associated with childhood disability and family poverty. The My Child program is really designed to intervene earlier and prevent children from getting to the point of disability. So in this slide, you'll see that parental stress declined over a 12-month period and crossed below the cutoff for clinical concern. Debbie mentioned the LAUNCH program. APT Associates, where I work, was also the national evaluator for LAUNCH, so we were very tuned into those outcomes. And in Boston, in the LAUNCH cohort, they were actually studied into the 18th month, and they showed a continuing decline in parental stress to well below the cutoff line for clinical concern among parents. And we believe, given the direction of the line, that had this population been studied longer, they would also have continued decline. On the child outcomes, looking at CBCL scores, we had a difference within the larger group of children who were in the clinical concern range on the CBCL scores and those who were below that range in the non-clinical concern range. Both groups saw a decline in the number of problem behaviors in the course of the work, but the group that started above the clinical concern threshold clearly saw a decline to and just below the threshold, and indicating an effect from the program. So in summary, there were lower CBCL scores for the children, reduction in disruptive behaviors and in challenging behaviors, reduced caregiver stress, second finding. The third is, and this is from the qualitative data, there was increased caregiver satisfaction over time. We also found an association with increased school attendance and reduced housing instability in the population. Now, you might recall Debbie's comments on some of the original evaluation assumptions, that we thought certain things like asthma and injury, which were drive cost in childhood health use and cost in childhood health, that these things would be, we would see results in this area. We were not at all sure what we would see in terms of use and cost overall in health. We had these five outcomes I reported a minute ago to you, but we wanted to see what kind of a story the MassHealth data would tell. And as I said before, 92% of the children were in the MassHealth program, and actually of all my child children, and 133 who were enrolled in the MassHealth analysis were, again, all MassHealth clients. So this was these are some of the assumptions in the data analysis. I mentioned before the issue of consent among caregivers. We coded diagnoses and procedures using ARC codes. We used a number of descriptive statistics from our analysis of MassHealth data. We actually looked at the statewide population of all children 0 to 14 over the period of years of the intervention. We went to 14 because children, as Debbie said, would be enrolled between the ages of 0 and the end of first grade, which we had set as possibly as high as 8 years old. And then, because the program ran for a period of 6 years, we wanted to be sure we captured a child who might have enrolled at close to 8 up to the 14th year in the data set. We looked at the statewide population, the Boston population, and then at the My Child population. Because the evaluation resources associated with the grant were not sufficient to have a control group from the beginning or to mount a control intervention or lack thereof, we used propensity score matching to identify a comparison group. And we doubled that group to 266 matches for the 133 enrolled children. 5 minutes, I will move along, and then went on to examine the differences in cost and utilization. So here is a summary of some of the baseline findings. There weren't differences between the treatment group and the control cohort, which underscores the good match that was achieved, but there was significant separation between the groups on diagnoses and mental health consultation, or the use of mental health services, which indicates an effect of My Child. And here, although the number of cases is small, the diagnostic differences were found to be significant. So kids in the treatment group, the My Child group as compared to the comparison group, were, for billing purposes, clinicians have to give a diagnosis, but the early childhood mental health clinicians and pediatricians really held off on labeling children and used more often an adjustment disorder diagnosis, really holding in check their hope that the intervention would mitigate risk and would remediate symptoms. You see in the match group of kids who were not in this intervention and who were using services in pediatric practices or in behavioral health specialty settings, those practitioners were not trained as part of the My Child thing to this public health perspective, and you saw a lot of discrete diagnoses of, as you see displayed here, anxiety, attention deficit, conduct disorders, mood disorders. So we've already stated some of these findings. I'm going to skip over this slide in the interest of time. And let's talk about what the effect was on cost for diagnosis. As described before, we did not find an effect for injury or asthma. We did, however, find an effect for mental health. A diagnosis of mental health, and in fact, multiple mental health diagnoses are predictive of cost and tied to greater utilization of services in this population. We expected cost increases for the treatment group because, after all, it was a mental health intervention. My child was designed to enhance early access to care and particularly to needed care. So we were actually surprised to discover that there were total cost decreases. And I will move to this last slide table of the regression analyses. So you'll see that although the number of mental health diagnoses increases per child per month costs by $235.32, overall health costs were reduced in the My Child cohort as compared to the control population by $164.21 per month. I note also there's some things in here like baseline disorders of teeth and jaw that increased costs by $507.97. So this is a case of having small ends where certain kids with very serious conditions who need surgeries and that kind of thing can skew the cost. So I just want to close and then my comments and turn this back over to Debbie to talk briefly about some things. That this average per child per month cost reduction is not a net of all program costs. Deborah mentioned earlier that there were some unreimbursed program costs that include part of the early childhood mental health clinician's time for participating in the learning communities, for example, and all of the family partner time. However, some rough preliminary calculations indicate that overall there will be a net savings associated with the program. Limitations in the evaluation. You know, the biggest issue had to do with the small ends, and that was very much tied to consent, persuading parents to participate in this on top of an already onerous national evaluation. However, high variability in Medicaid costs in a small end can skew results, but overall, I think we felt that we developed data that would support efforts and help us to refine replication, support sustainability, and enhance discussion at the Learning Collaborative. I'm going to turn this over to Debbie for some final comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. So, very briefly, I think our feeling was that this experiment was a success in terms of the feasibility and efficacy both of mental health integration for very young children in pediatric care. And we are going on, we've gotten further funding from SAMHSA to replicate both launch and something like the My Child model, in this case across the state, not just in Boston. So working with other cities across Massachusetts for replication, but still without having achieved the changes in Medicaid reimbursement policy that would make it possible to predict long-term un-grant-funded replication of the program. To that end, we are working as part of a learning collaborative on return on investment to try and really come up very specifically with the net savings due to this early intervention around child mental health and dyadic care, and really to make the case for the value of the family partner role and of integration generally. The other thing that I would highlight, aside from those very specific findings, is the finding Donna mentioned, which was not one we expected. It was not one of our hypotheses, which is this change in diagnosis from one adjustment disorder that leaves wide open what the future of the child would be, and the very high reliance on diagnoses like behavior disorder or ADD or ADHD in other kids who were, remember, matched in propensity scores to the My Child kids. And our question, I think, for future research is whether in the absence of an integrated system of care, we end up waiting for various adult systems to label children based on their behavior rather than proactively identifying and addressing their mental health needs. Thank you.